Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tate Modern. My name is Marco Daniel. I'm the curator of public programs, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome you here to this afternoon's event. The fourth interview in the Tate Art Monthly Talking Art series is between acclaimed artist Christian Markley, renowned for his collages of music, sculpture, film, and image, and art historian Gilda Williams, who as it happens, amongst the many outputs of her illustrious and prolific career, edited the Markley monograph for Phaidon. Markley's best-known works include Recycled Records, 1980-86, the video Guitar Drag of 2000, which features an amplified Fender guitar attached to a rope being pulled behind a pickup truck, Video Quartet, a four-screen montage of great and occasionally obscure moments of the musical moments from the history of film in a four-screen installation, which we have here at Tate. And the Sounds of Christmas, which was shown at Tate Modern in 2004. Markley, who moved from New York to London earlier this year, recently had a quite amazing solo show at White Cube, Crossfire, and I hope you will join me in welcoming Christian Markley and Gilda Williams for this afternoon, the fourth in our Talking Art collaborations between Tate and Art Monthly.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for coming. Thank you, Christian. The first thing I'd like to reflect on is the fact that because you are so specifically the artist who works with music and art and has this the sort of ultimate crossover between these two disciplines, my sense often is that it's overlooked how varied actually the art that you make is. In other words, the variation isn't just between the performance work and the gallery work, but the many strategies you use, which include using ready-mades, whether in records or music and film, collage, video, installation, seriality, even repetition, grids, themes that include gender, race, language, politics, I think, to some degree, language, archives, and so many different kinds of sources of sound, from tape sound, telephones, film sound, musical instruments, improvised music, unwanted sounds, the machine, the sounds the music-making machines make themselves, and silence. So within that very, very broad context, I just wonder, do you feel sometimes pigeonholed as that the sound-visual overlap and feel you'd want to be a different reception that looks more broadly at what you do or places you more broadly within the contemporary art scene?
No, I don't feel pigeonholed because I appropriate all these different mediums and approaches and forms, and that allows me to go in places that I want to. But the sound aspect is. Very much central to my work, and people see me as the artist who deals with sound in visual ways as well as sound, using the actual sound. I just use whatever form and media that I need. And that I find is appropriate for what I'm trying to do. And in that sense, I never get, I don't feel like stuck in something because I'm not, going to the studio and thinking, how am I going to paint that canvas today? I'll invest in different technologies just to because they best express what I'm trying to do. So be it video, be it just a sound recording, a performance, or a sculpture, or even a painting, that that's fine. So even though my work might appear, you know, very much kind of stuck on that one groove, that one sound thing, I think I allow myself a lot of freedom. But it is an important kind of question. And especially now that I've just moved to London and I have to kind of find new ways of working because I don't have my you know, New York infrastructure, my studio, and not that I'm very much of a studio artist per se, but one finds ways to kind of create work within an environment and whatever is more conducive. Are, you know, are certain circumstances, certain people, and access to technology or access to certain medium are easier, you know, maybe for me in New York, but.
These are hysterical.
Before we get to these, which are great, I wonder, I mean, because there's so much experimentation in your work, and you also allow for a lot of improvisation and raw edges in the work. Are there examples of works of yours that that you tried and had to abandon? I mean, there are there ever overlaps that you were exploring that couldn't actually result in a piece? Were there other kinds of?
Not really. It's more that you know, I don't want to be pigeonholed as a video artist, for instance. Now, I have a show right now that's been touring that originated in Paris at the Cité de la Musique, which focuses on my work in video. And even though the medium of choice there is video, I don't think of it as a video show, but more as a kind of music show, that where I'm using video to create music, to create musical compositions. It just happened that video allows me to have an image at the same time as the sound. But you know, and the show just opened in Melbourne in Australia, and everybody there thinks that I'm a video artist because that's all they see. And so now you know, if I've been doing something for too long, then I try to do something different.
These images everyone's seeing, which is from the body mix, obviously combinations of record covers that most of us will recognize. I wonder, how much does surprise affect your work? I mean, some of you might have seen during Freeze there was a screening of Up and Out, which is the images of Antonioni's blow-up coupled with the soundtrack to Brian De Palma's Blow Out, which you might want to describe a bit. But those of us who saw it was incredibly enjoyable. And the number of times image and audio overlap is quite extraordinary. I mean, you really understand the ebbs and flows of film. You know, when it's time for a love scene, both movies go to a love scene. When it's time for the action, there's a lot of overlap. I mean, how much does that kind of surprise is expected or is part of your work?
Well, this project in particular is a simple edit. It's one edit. It's the simplest video I've made. I just took the whole visual track of Blow Up and added the soundtrack of Blow Out just randomly, just, you know, starting the two films at the same time. So you see Blow Up and you hear Blow Out. So it's a perfect combination because Blow Up is a very visual film and is about a photographer looking and trying to resolve a crime and trying to find clues in images, while in Blowout, John Travolta is a sound engineer who's trying to do the same thing, resolve a crime using sound and trying to find clues in a sound recording. So those two seem to be a perfect kind of marriage of sound and image. This interesting kind of juxtaposition, which is purely chance. Now it's kind of fixed into this video, so it's always the same relationship. But that interest in the chance element is something that, of course, you know, has been explored by people like John Cage, this relationship is something I've experienced firsthand, watching Merce Cunningham's company dance with sounds of John Cage, scores by John Cage. And the idea was that you can start the dance and the music at the same time, and they would happen at the same time, but they were totally unrelated. And our brains are so used to trying to put sound and image together that we do it automatically, and we find connections between things that are unrelated. That kind of surprised me the first time I experienced that kind of juxtaposition. I got very inspired by that. I did eventually got to work with Merce Cunningham and experienced that really by making music with the dancers, not expecting anything. And audiences at the end of the show would come and say, you know, that must have been a lot of rehearsals to get those synchronization just perfect, but it was pure chance. I definitely believe very much in how chance can happen in a very positive way. And being a musician and an improviser musically, I've also experienced that a lot. When you're playing with other musicians, you know, you are trying very hard to be in sync with them, but sometimes accidents happen and you find yourself doing something that you weren't quite happy with, but the combination ends up being very good. And so you're always playing, you know, you're always in between that tension exists between what you're trying to achieve and what the circumstances, the medium in some cases. It's just like if you make a choice, you know, and decide to work with painting and it drips a certain way, or if you make a sound with a record and it skips a certain way. Those are interesting moments where you kind of lose control while you're trying to accomplish something. And I think that's just life, you know. We try very hard to follow a track, but things happen and one has to be alert to take advantage of those little incidents.
Which almost verge on the miraculous at one point in Up and Out, especially those of you who saw it will remember that the film, the soundtrack actually ends, so it's silent. Mm-hmm. And the last scene, of course, of Low Up is this mime. These mimers were miming a game of tennis, so mime being obviously silent, so it goes quiet just when the mimers
It's just perfect, yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Was that?
When the imaginary ball goes above the, you know, the screen, I mean above the court, and falls on the ground and the music stops, you know. I knew when I saw that, I was just like, I knew this was the right thing.
You know? Yeah.
There's these moments when you know you're on the right track, when it just happened. And, you know, because you start with an idea, And you don't know if the idea will end up being as attractive as the end result.
What about, I've always wondered, the body mixes, the ones you were seeing with the Michael Jackson and the various other record covers. I have this fantasy that you had thrown all your covers on the floor and somehow said, oh my God, Cat Stevens' hand is Sheena Easton's leg, you know, or something.
Yeah.
Was that an idea, or was that accidental somehow that then could be spread to lots of collages?
You know, I don't remember what the spark for that was, but I used to buy records every day, and you know, my studio was filled with records, and a lot of times the records would come out of the covers and never go back in the covers because of what I do with the records, and either in performance or, you know, in using them for recordings or for art. But I never threw away the covers because they're such interesting artifacts. so much thought went into the design of, not always, but most of the time, into this 12-inch square. And there's a whole, I mean, if you think of how many records were ever published, there's so much creativity there. And so I held on to them for a long time.